Follow our Twitter account at Wow Show.
It is Way of the Warrior, Eric O'Brien, along with Ken Evans. You can find us on Twitter and Facebook. Just search Wow Show, and then you can find us on the web at Wow Show MMA.
Wow MMA Show.
WowMMAShow.com. Find us online at WowMMAShow.com, or as I said, Twitter and Facebook, just search Wow Show. Another big weekend, UFC 157, but before we get to that one, want to quick wrap up what happened last weekend on Fuel. Henan Barão with a magnificent performance over Michael McDonald. What I loved about his performance was clearly in that first round, in my opinion, Ken, he was worried about McDonald's stand-up. He was very tentative and, you know, wanted to take it to the ground and take it out of McDonald's hands as often as possible. And then as the fight wore on, he obviously was able to wear McDonald down to sub him in the fourth. But it was a as much an Anderson Silva-esque performance, and I don't think I'm heaping accolades onto Henan Barão. I thought it was a very scientific approach to how to beat Michael McDonald without putting yourself in too much trouble.
Well, it went exactly, I think, how Dominic Cruz expected it to go. We talked to him last week. He thought Henan Barão was going to just kind of wear him down, and he's been a guy now who's been holding this interim belt for 200-something days. I mean, hell, by the time he gets to the next fight, he might be working on a year here at an interim belt. I think it's just a guy who went in there and kind of knew what he had to do at the championship level. I thought Michael McDonald looked fairly decent in the fight. Obviously, he just wasn't a match for Henan Barão, and I think I really want to see that Cruz fight now. I mean, that's where I left this fight. I don't know if there's anything left in that division for Henan Barão. I know we talked in the first segment about Uriah Faber could be back in the discussion depending on how the fight goes this weekend. I don't know. I don't know if anybody else in that division's got anything for Henan Barão other than Dominic Cruz at this point. So that's one of those matchups I kind of want to see. I watched the fight with Michael McDonald. I thought Michael McDonald's a good fighter. I know you're ranking these guys now as part of the UFC rankings. I don't know if I drop him that far just because he lost that fight. I think Henan Barão is that good, and he's starting to be one of those guys. He's championship tested now.
And to the credit, I put Michael at three. Mm-hmm. And I would say, Ken, to that effect, if this was a three-round fight, I think you have a different texture to that fight. It was those championship rounds mm-hmm. that Henan Barão, obviously he didn't get to the fifth round, but once we got to the fourth round, Barão knew exactly where he had him and got him to where he needed to be.
He just wore him out. I mean, his positioning was good on that choke on the ground, but he didn't overwork that choke, which I found interesting. And you don't see that with a lot of guys. You see them get frustrated or get impatient, and they try to move their positioning. And at first, I didn't think he had the right position. I didn't see the knee stretching him quite the way that he was.
Right.
And I was wondering why he wasn't adjusting that positioning to try to finish the fight. Henan Barão was patient. He knew what he wanted to do on the ground, and he held the position knowing that he had what he wanted. He had to be patient about it. If he would have adjusted, that might have been a chance for McDonald to escape. Or it might have been an instance where he didn't have quite the positioning he wanted to stretch him out. Would have blown his arms out. How many guys have we seen that have been in that position, blow their arms out, and then can't do anything the rest of the fight, end up losing a fight? Henan Barão did not let that happen. He was very smart in that fight.
Ask Shane Carwin about that.
Exactly. It's one of those situations where he held that position, and that's one of the most veteran moves I think I've seen in a long time from a lot of great UFC fighters, is just see him hold that position and know that he had it. He knew that he had it, didn't have to move, didn't have to do anything. And he literally didn't. That's sometimes one of the hardest things to do for a guy in a fight. Don't do anything else.
You've got it.
Right here. Just stop, sit down in the moment, so to speak, and just let the fight end. And we saw him in that position. You saw Michael McDonald give the thumbs up. I'm okay. Henan Barão knew that he wasn't okay and knew he didn't have to move. 20 seconds later, that fight was over.
And when you got a choke like that, one of the reasons that that fighter may think that he's okay is because perhaps the positioning of the arm, Ken, ends up being more over the blood vessel and less of a choke. So it's a blood choke. And essentially, we're turning the lights out on your brain.
And he doesn't feel like he's suffocating.
He doesn't feel like he's suffocating. He feels like he's just uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, he's waking up and the fight's over. And that's exactly what happened. The co-main event, as we promised, was as magnificent a fight as you could get on that night between Cub Swanson and Dustin Poirier. A magnificent performance from Cub Swanson. And to me, elevates him right up in there to what I want to see in that division facing a guy like Jose Aldo.
Really? I mean, it was a great fight.
Can
either of those guys hang with
Aldo? Can anybody hang with Jose Aldo?
That
seems like a dumb question.
This seems like
Not that there's such a thing as a dumb question, but like...
That was pretty dumb.
Okay.
But there's a championship quandary, don't you think? Almost in every division in the UFC right now.
Well, to me,
who can hang with these guys? Seem like they're all fighting for second place. They really do.
Yeah, because you've got Edgar, who I thought had a really good performance against Aldo. I'm not sure I want to see it again. You've got Mendez, not so great a performance against Aldo, who is still up in the upper echelon. You've got Lamas there. You've got the Korean Zombie when he's back from his shoulder injury. And to me, you've got Cub Swanson. And those are the guys I want to see. Dennis Seaver, I think a win or two away from also being in that contention. But again, it's a who's who of guys at that featherweight division. I'm not sure any of them have the tools to beat Jose Aldo.
And this was a fun fight, and I thought Cub Swanson was very impressive. Poirier obviously came to fight as well.
As he always does.
Is that another one where you really don't move those guys around a lot in your rankings?
I literally just have them separated by one. I put Cub at 5, and I had Dustin at 7 with Seaver in the middle.
Okay, so who do you have right now at 2 and 3 then?
I have Mendez at 2. Lamas at 3 and the Korean.
Lamas at 3?
Well, because to me it was a debate between.
Rabble, I know, about the rankings.
Send me the hatred about your rankings and feel free to do it better, whatever you want to do. To me, the Korean Zombie and Lamas are kind of interchangeable. And as this was my first outgoing, I just kind of wanted to get it out there and adjust it accordingly. But
this was your first week in the
this
rankings.
This is my first week in the rankings, so they can obviously all adjust. I won't adjust guys who don't fight. Obviously,
right.
That would be silly. But
do it just to
yes.
Make
but to me,
angry
Lamas and without knowing that the Korean Zombie is coming back for sure, I ranked Lamas a little bit higher.
Okay, I know you like Lamas.
It's a learning curve. Feel free to send me emails, whatever you want to do. The other fight that I wanted to talk about was obviously the Jimmo Tahuna fight, because I don't know that Jimmo could have hit James Tahuna any harder, and Tahuna be like, yeah, it's cool. Let's do this for 3 more rounds, and I'm going to totally win this thing. I got this.
That was a ridiculous fight to watch, because every 10 seconds it should have been over?
Yes.
That's what it felt like.
Yeah, I mean, it was an incredible fight, and again, a guy that we knew came to fight, and Jimmo really had to walk out of that one shaking his head going, I don't have anything else to beat. Anything else to beat you with.
There was nothing else, and you have to look at a fight like that and wonder what somebody would have to do to beat James Tahuna at this point.
Apparently, much like trying to knock out Roy Nelson, you're going to need something bigger. You're going to need bigger fists, or I don't know what you're
going
to need.
I mean, yeah, if you look at this guy now and you're going in to fight him, and I don't know who we'd line him up against next with the rankings, but it's one of those things where a guy who comes in would probably have to say, all right, so how do I get him down to sub him? Because that seems to be the only thing you can do.
Because punching is not
Is he going to get hit much harder in his career?
Than Jimmo? I don't think so.
Oh,
I mean,
my gosh.
Because Jimmo was just laying it on him. And then this weekend we've got a big, 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 huge fight. You've got UFC 157.
Oh, I hadn't heard anything about this.
I know. The first time ever.
Do some TV or something on this.
Two women are going to main event a UFC card as the title is on the line. Champ Ronda Rousey taking on Liz Carmouche. Another historical element to this fight is Liz is the first openly gay fighter in the organization. So it's kind of big on both levels. I'm full bore. I love the countdown shows. They get me excited all the time. And I am full on into this one. I think Ronda Rousey, her ability to armbar people from essentially anywhere fascinates me to no end. I'm also fascinated on the other side. Is the rumor true that perhaps her game is kind of one-dimensional? Takes you to the ground, rips your arm off, that's the end. Can you beat her in other ways in jiu-jitsu as long as you don't use your arms? I don't know.
Does that matter if you're a woman, though? I mean, in this division at this point, and I love Ronda Rousey. I love watching her. I think she's got that great, that killer instinct, and Dana's talked about that a couple times too, but I don't know if there's a lot of talent in this division. We've got her fighting what could be ranked the 8th or 9th best woman in that weight class at this point, depending on who you ask, but nobody else stepped up to fight.
I
understand
say,
that.
We're fans of the newfound Chael Sonnen way to get a fight, and to me, if you're the person that steps up and goes, I'll fight you,
I give Carmouche a ton of credit for that.
You're a contender to me.
And I give Rousey a lot of credit. I mean, think about this pressure. You're walking in essentially to a title fight, and she has been, for the past couple of weeks, she hasn't wanted to grab that belt. Have you heard about this?
No.
Dana had to make her grab the belt for press photos, and he did it again last night. She doesn't want to take the belt because she wants to win that belt. She doesn't really consider that hers. In a very George St. Pierre way, when he came back from his injury, she doesn't consider that belt hers yet, which makes me think she's going to tear Carmouche's arm off in about a minute.
Yeah, I mean, that's
her drive, and you watch those primetime specials, it's amazing to watch her. And you see that seething anger underneath her. She reminds me a lot of the Diaz brothers. When you see the way she's come up and how she had to deal with kids in school and then just her upbringing. And Dana said a similar thing. It's like she's a Diaz sister or something along those lines.
Well, and like in the countdown shows, there's that crazy story her mom tells about this judo competition where they were so scared of her arm bars that they just changed the rules. You can't do an arm bar. And so she just annihilated everybody by throwing them on their head then, you know?
Right.
And when you're dealing with somebody of that mindset who now doesn't believe they're actually the champion, yeah, it's kind of a scary proposition to get in the ring with that person.
And I think this should perform well. I mean, we have a lot of hype around this at this point. And I guarantee you, whatever that number ends up being, we're going to say it's disappointing if it's not 700,000 pay-per-views. That's a ridiculous expectation for the first ever women's MMA bout.
Let me ask you, though, because you've been kind of the most vocal person on the show about this proposition, so to speak. Seeing all the press and watching all the countdowns and following all this, are you at least more excited to see what happens? Because I'm super excited.
I'm excited to see what happens. Here's the problem. Other than having this Machida Henderson fight, which we'll get into in a couple minutes on the card, I'm not sure I buy this card with just those two on the top of the card at this point. I mean, this is a really big card. They stacked it fairly well, especially considering we're coming off the Super Bowl card. I mean, you've got Uriah Faber on this card as well. Josh Koscheck always seems to sell well. You got a lot of fighters on this card you want to buy. So it's certainly a card that I'm going to say, okay, I want to take a look at this card. I want to see what happens. I'm more interested, especially after the prime times, to see what happens in this title fight. That's not going to carry through, though, for the next 2 years. What we're going to need to see is a couple of women flesh things out inside the division and figure out who's a real contender there, who's really in the top five that's willing to take this fight. It's not going to be Santos. Cyborg, she's signed with Invicta, correct?
Yeah, which
maybe.
No, she signed with Invicta, which is a very complicated, crazy story. But the long and short of it was UFC was going to let her fight with Invicta, but the money wasn't there or whatever. So she just said, forget the UFC part. I'm going to sign with Invicta. It's the short
right.
story.
And again, I'm not one of those people that says she should have gotten even a title fight. I mean, she didn't pass the drug test. She was cheating and she might not necessarily have been the right person to take this fight. But she was certainly one of the most interesting fights out there still at this point. I wanted to see that happen. That could still happen. Again, Invicta, where are they going to be in a month? Who
right.
knows?
Well, and Carmouche has fought Invicta, you know, so there's obviously going to have to be some trade back and forth. Dana has alluded to the fact that the head of Invicta, her name is slipping my mind, that they have essentially a business relationship, that they're going to sign people and trade them back and forth to keep them busy, because the UFC, with only one division, can't continually do a whole bunch of women fights all year long. There's just not the staple of people to do that. So they need to put them someplace else to keep them.
Well, I mean, think how long it's taken us just to build the lighter weights.
Right.
In the UFC with men. So, I mean, that's going to be the same process at a minimum for the women's weight class. So this one, yeah, you know what? It's the first fight. I want to see her go in there. I want to see what happens in a UFC cage. Next time around, we're going to need to have a competitive fight if we're expecting this to headline the card. I'm of the mind that maybe she's not necessarily going to be headlining cards for a while. I mean, hell, we just saw a title fight on Fuel. So
Right.
Tell me Ronda Rousey, if she wins this fight, isn't made for a Fox card.
No, I mean, that's where
Come
I would
on.
Put her next. That's
Come on.
For sure where I would put her next.
That's where I think she's going to land next.
I think the scarier proposition is if Carmouche wins this one.
Then we got to see what happens in the division.
Right. The co-main event, as Ken alluded to, Machida and Dan Henderson. Winner of this gets the number one contender title officially. Which
either guy
wins.
That's a unique thing in the UFC.
That is a unique thing.
Number one contender,
especially when you got guys like Alexander Gustafsson, who's making Harlem Shake videos calling out John Jones. So he is not a contender at this point. It is either Lyoto Machida and Dan Henderson. Henderson never been KO'd. All Machida's talking about is wanting to KO him. This one's interesting for me and a hard one to call.
Oh, it's damn near impossible to call, and that's because I'm going to guess you just think Machida should win. Machida should win, but Dan Henderson's in there, you can never say some guy should win.
I think, you know, when you're dealing with age and you're dealing with ranking, yes, he should win, but Dan's that guy that when they roll out the countdown and go, well, he could be the first guy who has the Pride, the Strikeforce, and the UFC belt, they go, yep, he probably could totally be that guy. Sure,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, Dan Henderson's hard to ever pick against, and I think that's why people have trouble with this fight, because when you look at the competition they've had recently, Machida's the guy that, you know, should win this fight. Is he going to win the title after this fight? I don't think so, unless something crazy happens and Chow wins that fight against John Jones for whatever reason, which I don't think is the craziest thing in the world.
No, not the craziest thing.
Not to get too far ahead, but Machida's the guy that I think, when you look at it and you look at everything and you go to the Wikipedia page and you go to the rankings with you and all your friends and all that stuff, Machida's the guy that should win. But there's that nagging thing, and that nagging thing is Dan Henderson's big right hand at a minimum.
Yeah, well, and that nagging thing is even when you look at most rankings on most websites, Sports Illustrated, MMA Weekly, the official UFC rankings, when you look at pound for pound, Henderson is always on that list.
Yeah, he can't break the top five in any weight class until you get to pound for pound.
Yep, and then he's the best ever.
Right.
So it makes for a very interesting fight. Like we alluded to earlier, Uriah Faber's taking on Ivan Menjivar and Court McGee, Josh Neer on that card. And an interesting fight to kick off the card as Robbie Lawler, who was in the UFC, went to Strikeforce, now back in the UFC, is taking on Josh Koscheck and should be a fun fight at welterweight.
Those are two guys I wouldn't mind if the UFC had around probably for the next 10 years.
Yep.
And that's
although it seems to me like Robbie Lawler's been fighting for 20 years already.
Oh, he has, but. And I'm more than curious if he's one of those guys that once we see the payouts, if he's not a guy that got himself a nice Strikeforce contract, a decent name for them during the time that they were on the air. And they were running events.
For sure. And that is Saturday night. You can follow along with all of the results on Twitter and Facebook. Just search WOW Show. Segment 3, we will talk to Uncle Chael, who I think arguably is the best coach ever to be on The Ultimate Fighter. He will talk about that. He'll talk about John Jones. And he'll talk about a whole bunch of other things that only Chael can talk about. It's next. It's Way of the Warrior, your MMA show.